Google has long dominated the world of search engines, but it's beginning to look like Google's plan is to dominate the world. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning, I'm Charity Nebbe. You can now use Google to make phone calls. Gmail got another cool feature this week, and there are rumors flying that Google is about to launch a Facebook competitor. It's Tech Day with Iowa State University computer consultant Jeff Ballvance. We will talk about the Google universe, and the internet is full of things you can watch. We'll talk about how the different content sites compare and the different ways you can stream that content on your television. We'd love to hear from you. What do you think about Google? What are you watching on your PC, Mac, or TV? And if you're watching content from the internet on your television, how are you getting it there? Please join the conversation. You can call us or send an email after this news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. We're talking about technology today. There has been a flurry of announcements and a whole lot of talk about Google in the past week. Now you can use Google to make phone calls. Gmail has a new priority inbox, so Google will actually prioritize your email for you. And there is talk that Google is going to launch a competitor for Facebook. And when you're looking for something to watch, you can choose between, of course, whatever's on your television and YouTube, Amazon, Netflix, Hulu, and many other content sites. We'll talk about content providers and the different ways that you can stream that content on your television. My guest today is Jeff Ballvance. He's a computer consultant at Iowa State University. Hello, Jeff.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome.
You can also join our conversation by calling 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Jeff, I think the thing that Google did last week that probably, or the, in the past week that probably got the most buzz was introducing their phone service. How does that work?
Well, if you look at your Gmail page over on the left side where all of the contacts are, the chat area, there's one line on the top, just above your contacts, kind of in the middle of a little telephone icon, says call phone. If you click that, a little dial pad pops up. You can click the numbers, and you will be taken to make a connection between the sound on your computer and any telephone anywhere you want. And at least for the remainder of the year, calls in the United States and Canada will be free. International calls are going at the ridiculous rate of 2 cents a minute. And so the nice thing is that you can do this from anywhere in the world. You can even set it any machine, anywhere you've got an internet connection, and make a phone call. It's kind of cool.
And that would just, it's much like Skype, where it would just use the microphone and the speaker on your computer.
Exactly. And for that reason, of course, if you're going to use that kind of thing, a headset's the best, unless you really want to share your conversation with everyone around you, which you can certainly do.
Well, we can all use our speaker phones for that as well if we really want to. But the have you tried it out? Do you know anything about the quality?
I have. The quality is reasonably good. I would say it's probably as good as some of the cheap cell phones I've used. At least for a relatively nearby call, I called myself basically to find out how it worked, and it does do it. There's a little bit of a delay in that you'll see some lag, but you'll see the same kind of thing on a Skype call as well. One of those reasons to oppose net neutrality, so you can give more priority to phone traffic, I guess.
When I saw this, I thought, is Google trying to get around cell phone service providers? So my question is, if you have this capability or a data plan on your phone, on your cell phone, can you use the Google call to get past any kind of cell phone minutes and just use your data plan?
I'm not exactly sure what technology they're using, whether it's Flash or some other kind of capability. I haven't looked into it closely. But yeah, if your phone supported a data plan and your phone supported the application that pops up when you do this, yeah, I don't see any reason why you couldn't.
So this may be part of Google's plan to further dominate the cell phone business as well.
Well, they're certainly good at dominating things.
Right. Well, the other announcement in the past week was that they've created a priority inbox for Gmail. And, of course, Gmail is getting to be more and more popular, more and more email addresses that I get seem to come from Gmail accounts. What does the priority inbox do?
Well, the idea is that, just like everything else, obviously, if you're logged into Google Mail, you have, you know, given them your credentials, you've given them personalization, so they know who you are. They watch the mail, the mail that you read, and the stuff that seems to be more pertinent to you, the things that get read more often, those have higher priority over the things that you skip over or, you know, open and then close and delete right away. They can tell the difference. And so those things that you spend, you know, more time in and open more often, those become priority. Those become higher priority. And those are the ones that will show up in your priority inbox. So the messages from your boss, assuming that you use Gmail as your communications, between you and the rest of your company, those messages will pop up more in the priority inbox. A message from your spouse will probably wind up in the priority inbox, assuming that you open messages from your spouse. The idea behind it is that, you know, there's a lot of junk that comes in. They've always done spam filtering. This is the same idea, only worse. You get the things that are important to you show up in the priority box, and the things that aren't just stay in the regular inbox.
And of course, anybody who's used Gmail knows that they're mining all of your mail for information all the time, because you see personalized ads that pop up on Gmail that seem to be really perfect for the moment.
That's right. When you open a mail message, the bots scan the mail message, and you'll notice that on the right side of the message window there are little text ads there. Those text ads are tailored to the content of the message, and that's one of the ways that Google pays for all this.
Now, I suppose this must raise some privacy concerns, even though, as I mentioned, they've already been mining the information in your email. I know that people have privacy concerns about Gmail, period. Have you heard anybody saying, okay, you know, a priority inbox, now Google's deciding what's important to us as well?
Well, that is, there are people making those kind of noises. That's true. It is possible, you know, and then one of the examples was given, you know, if you're getting all this stuff in your priority inbox, what about an important message from a family member that doesn't make it into priority because they never contact you, but this is something new and special? And because all you've gotten conditioned to just read the stuff in your priority boxes, does that mean you're not going to see it in the inbox and completely ignore it for some reason? That's a possibility. And indeed, the question, you know, you always wonder, the question has always become, you know, what's important to Google? Could some corporate or government interest decide that this is important and this should go in the priority inbox, and can they somehow override the algorithms and include that as being something critical? I don't know. You know, it all goes back to Google's mission statement. If you look at their corporate mission statement, one of the tenets of the company is don't do evil. The question is, how long can you resist the temptation to do evil because it's extremely profitable?
Right. How do you define evil?
Exactly.
Especially once money is involved. Well, the other thing, and this was not an announcement this week, but this is a rumor that's flying about, is that Google is on the verge of launching a Facebook competitor.
That's true. They've done things that were similar before. I mean, they had the Orkut service that they bought, and that was a friend's neighborhood that was prominent primarily in Brazil, but they tried to spread it around the world. Didn't catch on because of Facebook's popularity. They've done other things, the whole Buzz service, the idea of collaboration using Google Buzz, that came on. It was kind of a Google Labs thing, so it didn't catch on. And last week they announced that Buzz was going by the wayside. They're abandoning Buzz.
I thought they were abandoning Wave.
I'm sorry, they're abandoning Wave.
Right. Okay.
Wave. Thank
but
you.
Buzz is
still there. It's still around, but it really hasn't caught on among the people that I have contact with. At least they all kind of went, "Oh, Buzz, that's neat. Now let's move on." So that wasn't really exciting. And the elements that it would take to make a Facebook-like tool, the personalization, that's all in Google Profiles. So conceivably, you could start from that and build a Facebook competitor. I think what Google's really looking at as far as, you know, making the time and making the money is the the gaming environment. I think really that's what everybody's after in Facebook. The fact is that 30% of the time that people spend on Facebook is playing games from various companies. And, well, Google did in fact buy some parts for that. They bought a company called Slide. They make applications for social networking. They took a financial stake in Zynga. Nobody knows what Zynga is, but zillions of people are familiar with Farmville, and that's where Farmville comes from. It's a Zynga product. And, you know, when you start buying up social networking application companies and get buying pieces of them like Zynga, you start to wonder what they're up to. And obviously the next thing might be, you know, let's incorporate gaming into the Google Apps experience somehow.
And why do you think that would be so important for Google?
Well, it's the whole business line. What Google sells people is eyeballs, pure and simple. That's what AdSense is all about. That's what the whole displaying Google applications and the mail system. It's to get more people looking at Google advertisements. And if you've got people playing games, what happens when you open a game? First thing that you see is the advertisement. Okay, there's another 15 million games advertisements a day. That's the whole Google model.
And one of our listeners did answer my question on Twitter about the using your data plan to make phone calls. They say that if you have a data plan on your phone, you can download Google Voice, and that will give you free calling from a personal Google number. So Google apparently has already already taken control of that.
Google's sort of done that. And there were several analysts who said, no, wait a minute, why is Google building the phone into Google Mail? I mean, you already have Google Voice. Why not just build it into that tool? But that's not the way it worked. It was into mail instead.
Do you have a theory for why that is?
Not a clue, other than the fact that I think Google may be big enough now that there are parts that don't talk to each other very well.
Well, and I suppose it is much higher profile. I mean, a lot of people have Gmail who haven't downloaded Google Voice.
That's true. Google Voice is an application. That's a nice thing about the Google Phone tool. The Google Phone tool isn't a downloaded application. It will run from the browser. So they're exploiting the capabilities in the new browsers, especially in Chrome. It works really well in Chrome.
We are talking about technology on Talk of Iowa today. My guest is Jeff Ballvance. He's a computer consultant at Iowa State University. And we're talking right now about Google's dominance and plans to dominate further. There are people who have a lot of concerns about Google's dominance, about their monopoly in many areas, and maybe the breach of privacy in many other areas. Let us know what you think about Google. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPRTalk, and you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You're listening to Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and we're talking about technology today with Jeff Ballvance, a computer consultant at Iowa State University. We've been talking about Google and a number of announcements that have been made in the past week and some rumors flying about Google, and we'd love to hear what you think about Google's dominance in the world of the internet and computers and now the phone market and all over the place. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPRTalk, and you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Eric is on the line from Des Moines. Hello, Eric.
Hi. I was just curious, is someone actually physically reading your Gmail and what do you think of the idea of with the privacy issue as far as laws regarding U.S. mail? And I mean, and I would think it would fall under the same or could fall under the same, you know, laws. I mean, that's with somebody opening up your mail in your mailbox.
Right. Well, Eric, you're breaking up a little bit, so I'm going to put you on hold, but I think we got the gist of your question, so you can continue to listen. But, Jeff, no one is actually reading your emails that go through Gmail, right?
As a general rule, I would say no. The only time that anyone would read emails in any Internet service provider would be if law enforcement subpoenaed it. That occasionally becomes necessary. If there's a subpoena regarding evidence, that's the only time that people would read emails. We always have the running joke at ITS. Well, it's your day to read email. Of course, we get at Iowa State, we get somewhere in the neighborhood of 1.5 million emails a week, and we really don't have enough time to do that. Now, having said that, Google does read your email. But what it does is no person reads your email. Computer programs read your email, determine what it's talking about, and supply you with advertisements related to that. How much of that information is saved? I would suspect very little. If there is information saved, it's saved more in the aggregate than it is in the personalized. But Google does keep track of the kind of things that you do and provides you with that information that goes with that. So there is a fine, fuzzy line in between the what do we know about you and what do we know about people in general.
Well, and theoretically, that kind of technology could definitely be used for spying on people. I mean, it could flag certain phrases and things like
could.
That.
You know, you could certainly use it for that purpose. And the National Security Agency is at least reportedly does a certain amount of filtering of internet traffic for that purpose as well, to look for certain keywords, information about possible terrorist attacks, and so on. I don't know that Google does that. I don't believe they do. But it's certainly something that would be possible to do.
Is it possible within an organization, say, if your company that you work for has an email setup where you're using a server at the company to send your email, is it possible that there are companies who are using that kind of filtering software and watching what you say?
It certainly is possible that your company could be having, even to the point of having administrators reading your email. That is the company's prerogative if they provide the mail service.
And there are no laws that protect your email like the U.S. mail.
There really is not legal precedent on that, to my knowledge. It is not the same as a U.S. mail envelope, no.
All right. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Robert's on the line in Waterloo. Hello, Robert.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
Is there a website out there that you can get a free... did a free phone call on the internet.
Okay. I know we were talking about Google Phone earlier. Jeff, there are a number of services that give you free phone usage over the internet. What are some of the most popular ones?
Now you've got me on a spot.
I know Skype, obviously.
Skype does that. That's right. That's for the most part Skype's business model. Although Skype doesn't go as far as Google does. Skype will allow you to call other Skype users on their computers for free. Calling from telephone to from Skype to a telephone is a for-pay service.
Right, but very inexpensive.
It is very inexpensive, especially compared to some long-distance plans.
All right, Robert, you might want to check out Skype, but I think that if you probably Google free telephone service, you'd probably come up with some other options as well. The number to call is 866-780-9100. Our email address is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Thomas wants to move on to the other subject one of the other subjects that we were going to talk about today, so we can move on to that. And that's using content on the web for entertainment and streaming it to your PC, but also streaming it to your television. Hello, Thomas.
Yes. I'm in a household where we haven't switched to HD television yet, so I'm kind of perplexed as how to proceed. I know that coming out of my computer, I have a VGA cable, but the only thing that I have going input into my TV would be RCA outlets.
Right, and that is a difficulty of conversion. The best thing to do, if assuming your computer can do it, would be to supply it with, if you're looking at going out of the computer and into the TV, would be to look at something, a video card that provides S-video output. That's probably the most common tech. That's the approach we took at our house. We added an S-video card to a computer and went from there to into the DVD recorder. You can use the standard standard camera jacks or you know line in jacks for the rest of the video system. Video cards are relatively inexpensive. There may well be converters. I think there are converters from USB to S-video. There are a number of different ways you can do that.
I've seen converters that say you can watch your TV and your PC, but they don't say whether you can go the other way around.
Yeah, going the other way around is fairly easy, and in fact, a lot of computers already have it. What you're looking for in the case of a computer would be an older TV would be composite video. It will be an RCA jack, usually yellow in color is the key. And if you don't have that in the video card you have in your computer now, it's easy enough to add one.
Okay, it's called an S video card.
Yeah, what you probably want is either S video or composite video. And the thing to look at will be look at the other devices that you have and see what you have for inputs into your TV or your DVD player or wherever you can put in video.
Okay, all right. Well, that's a little more than I used to know.
All right. Well, good luck with that, Thomas.
All right.
Jeff, you stream content from your computer onto your television at your house. How do you do it?
Well, we have a dedicated computer. It's an Ubuntu Linux machine. We originally bought it as a file server, which we do still use as a file server. But, you know, you do backups to the file server every so often, and the rest of the time the computer just sits there. We discovered, after looking at it closely, that there was, in fact, an S-video out port. We took the S-video, we bought a 15-foot cable, and we plugged it into the back of the DVD recorder, and instantly we had a device that would allow us to play internet video. From there, we use a number of different services. We have access to the Hulu desktop is available for Linux as well as Windows and Mac OS. We use YouTube and a number of other places, and we watch TV over our 1.5 megabit DSL connection. That works great until the two teenage daughters decide to watch YouTube videos on their laptops as well, and then you get a lot of slowdowns and staggering and latency, and then you go down and you yell at them.
That doesn't sound like a very high-tech
It's not a very high-tech approach, but right. It works.
Well, we'll talk more about the different services for content on the internet. Does having a Linux box really limit what you can access?
It does. The biggest thing, I suppose, that it limits is with a Linux box, you don't have access to iTunes. If you have Mac OS or Windows, then you have the option of getting iTunes. That's not available for Linux.
All right. Well, we'll talk about some of the other services, Amazon.com, iTunes, Netflix, Clicker, Hulu, all of the different sites available. We'd like to hear what you like to watch and how you get it to your television if you watch that way, or maybe you're just streaming on your computer. Let us know. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We're talking about technology today with Jeff Ballvance, a computer consultant at Iowa State University. We've been talking about Google, and now we've moved on to talking about different video internet content providers on the web that you can stream on your PC, on your Mac, on your phone, but also that you can stream on your television if you know how to set that up. And there are many different ways to do that. We'd love to hear about your workaround for that. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And before we get to talking about the different service providers or content providers, Mark has a question from the Quad Cities. Hello, Mark.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Yes, I'm wondering about this net neutrality issue with Google and Verizon being involved. And also, I saw something about a government kill switch for internet service providers. Is there governments getting too involved in different areas, and I'd appreciate your comments.
A government kill switch, what are you talking about?
I don't know. I don't know if it's a security issue. I'm not sure exactly what they were talking about, but the government could step in and shut down services. Also, I think maybe I'm being throttled by my provider because I do some torrent sharing. So,
okay. Well, there's a couple of different things going on. One is the idea of internet kill switch. The idea behind the kill switch is that in the event of a national emergency, of some sort, particularly network related, the government is demanding the ability to shut the internet down in the event of some kind of an emergency. That has been introduced into a couple of bills in the past. Those provisions have not made it through anywhere. It's popular because the government thinks it should be able to control things. I think the shutting the internet down is probably a bad enough idea that it's not a reasonable thing to even consider, but that doesn't mean politicians will stop considering it. The whole idea of net neutrality and the Google and Verizon talking about it, I think the business of net neutrality is to be able to say, okay, an internet service provider should not be able to grant priority to particular services or particular types of particular services or particular types of traffic. In your case, you talk about being throttled because you're doing BitTorrent. That's very common. We do it here at Iowa State to some extent. BitTorrent traffic gets lower priority than some of the others. And that's very common in a lot of internet service providers to vary the priority of different traffic by type. The business of net neutrality, though, goes beyond that. What some providers would like to do and what Google and I believe Verizon are opposing is to say, this company will pay extra for premium internet traffic service so that, for example, let's say Netflix wanted to be sure that its traffic got to your location faster than, say, iTunes traffic. So that means that if Netflix paid the internet service provider some kind of an extra fee, then their traffic would get priority over Apple's. That people don't like the idea of, unfortunately, a lot of the internet service providers and a lot of especially the content providers, like it and are lobbying for it. The last I heard, Google and Verizon were against it.
Why do you make BitTorrent traffic a lower priority?
Well, we make BitTorrent traffic a lower priority because, as a general rule, part of it is because many times BitTorrent is used for illegal file sharing as well as legal file sharing. But, it is a fairly large traffic chunk. If you allow it to become, if you allow it to take over the wire, there won't be room for legitimate things like mail and FTP and sessions of that nature. So we do tend, especially in the dormitories, to trim that traffic down a little bit. We use a technology called packet shaping. And that's very common, and a lot of internet service providers do that.
With the concerns about copyright violation with BitTorrent and some other file sharing or other ways to share files, are there universities that have completely blocked those?
There are. There are places that have completely blocked torrents at all. We recognize that there are legitimate uses for torrent technology. We use it ourselves for some things, and so we believe that it's probably a bad idea to shut it off altogether.
Well, let's move on to talking about some of these content providers on the web. There is a news announcement in the past week that Apple is going to introduce 99-cent television episodes on iTunes. And the idea is that you can rent these episodes for 99 cents and keep them for, I don't know, 24, 48 hours and watch them during that time. And then you would no longer have access. And that's one of the methods that Amazon.com uses as well, that you can rent a new release or a movie for a limited period of time. And then after that time is up, you would no longer have access to it. There are so many different ways that sites are delivering content that it's almost difficult to bite off a piece of it to talk about. But I mean, Amazon Video On Demand and iTunes are two of the ones that are really at the top of that rental type category.
Right. And to some extent, the rental at Amazon is a little different. Many of the things that that Apple will be renting for, you know, 24, 48 hours, Amazon allows you to download and use for a much longer time. And so that's going to be a contention, a competition factor. You know, well, yeah, I could download this from iTunes for a buck and watch it, or I could download it from Amazon for a buck and watch it for the next month, or maybe even keep it all together. So that'll be a competition factor in that field.
And you mentioned both Clicker and Hulu. Tell me a little bit about each of those sites.
Well, Clicker isn't really a content provider. Clicker is more of an index. All of the stuff on Clicker is actually on some other video download or video streaming site. The trick is that Clicker makes sense of it all. Clicker indexes it by category. It allows you to search it. It's a search engine for everybody's videos. You can do that to some extent with Google, but Google's traffic doesn't get into things like iTunes videos, for example, or Netflix, and Clicker can. Clicker can also filter things, so you can be cheap like me and turn off everything but the free channels. And then you will see only the stuff that you can download for nothing, with the slight exceptions. So it makes it easier to find something. You know, Clicker doesn't provide you anything that you don't already have on the net. The trick is, just like Google goes out and organizes that information, Clicker organizes the videos.
Okay, so but they're not service. Actually providing any content, but
exactly.
They allow you to sift through all of the content that's out there.
Yeah, so if I'm looking for episodes of Star Trek, well, I don't know where they are. I'm not sure where to look. So I just go to Clicker, say Star Trek, and it'll give me the list of all of the stuff.
And Hulu is another free site, at least free for now.
Well, Hulu's a hybrid site.
Okay.
Hulu has some content that is free. And in many cases, they're sort of an indexing site in that respect, too, because many cases the free content is actually somewhere else, like Kids WB or CW or CBS. But they also provide content, including, you know, full-length feature movies, for a premium price. I believe it's $9.99 a month. You have access to additional stuff that the free people don't get through Hulu Plus.
And I've used the Hulu free service before, and they do have advertisements embedded within the videos.
That's right. There are ads in the videos in Hulu, and that's how you pay for the service. In effect, Hulu is the
short
broadcast TV of the internet.
And they do have a strong relationship with NBC.
Right.
Are they owned by NBC?
I don't know that they're completely owned by NBC, but they have a relationship.
And then there's Netflix, and Netflix offers some of its content on a streaming basis, where if you sign up for a rental service with them, if you get, say, one DVD a month or even two DVDs a month, you'll get to watch as much streaming video as you want.
Right. And the big advantage of, well, there are a couple of big advantages of Netflix. One is $8.99 gets you one DVD that you watch and you send back for another DVD. That's an old model for them. So you get the DVDs through the mail, but you also have rights to stream content. And the thing that Netflix has done is they've created Netflix integration for a wide variety of devices. So you can get Netflix on your computer. You can get Netflix on game machines, the Xbox 360, the PlayStation 3, the Nintendo Wii. How many people own a Wii and don't know that they can watch Netflix on it? The iPad has Netflix. The Apple TV, the new second generation Apple TV that Apple just announced yesterday, has Netflix. A wide variety of tools. A lot of TV sets, DVD players and TV sets, especially from Samsung, have Netflix built in. So you can plug Ethernet into the back of the TV set and watch Netflix movies on it. So that's their niche. Is a wide variety of devices.
Right. They also have a relationship with Roku, so you could buy a Roku box.
Right.
And Netflix on that.
Netflix is one of the other devices. One of the companies that has Roku channel. Roku is a cute little box, like the new Apple TV. It's a small box. It plugs into the TV, and the nice thing about Roku is it's less than $100. The high definition standard version is $69.95. You plug it in. That's the first cost. That's the only cost you pay. From there, you work with content providers, and they have a wide variety of content providers. You can stream from Netflix and Amazon and Pandora and Sonimi and dozens of places, paid or unpaid. And so the setup is almost ridiculously simple. It has both wired Ethernet jack and wireless, so all you really have to do is plug it into your TV, turn it on. It's about as easy to hook up as a DVD player.
I get the impression that we're starting to see an evolution. You know, at first when we started to see video on the internet, nobody would pay for video on the internet, and right, everything had to be free or it was completely ignored. And that's, I think, where Hulu decided they wanted to be with, you know, very brief advertisements, but free content because nobody was paying for content on the internet. But it seems like people are getting to be more willing to pay for some of this content.
I think that's true. I think that's partly, I think it's due to the commercialization of the internet. I mean, originally the internet was the Wild West, and everything was free, and we downloaded stuff that we shouldn't have been downloading. Because we could make it available. Now the internet has become, you know, Main Street. And so we have, we have Walmart, we have video stores, and we have all kinds of things that we can do on the net, and it's commercial, and we're used to the idea of putting in our credit card number and getting things.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if that evolution ever reaches journalism and people start paying for journalistic content again. I know there are many print journalists that are hoping that someday that will happen. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Jeff, another thing that I know you wanted to talk about today is a bug in the Windows system that has been exploited.
Right. There is a... Well, it's a very large security announcement from Microsoft and everybody. There's an exploit in the way that dynamic link libraries are loaded. And that's a really complicated technical statement, but what it simply means is that it's possible for a malicious piece of software to pretend it's part of one of your regular programs. And so what that allows the program to do is to open in circumstances that you normally wouldn't see. And it's a very serious error because it can't really be fixed in Windows properly. It's more likely that it will need to be fixed application by application, and there are, at last estimate, a couple of hundred applications that will need to be fixed. So you'll be seeing updates for a lot of the software that you probably have in the near future. Now, Microsoft has released a patch that prevents the vulnerability from being exploited. It also breaks a lot of things. So it's not really a solution. But if people are... in a corporate environment, for example, in corporate IT, and they're looking at going, oh, this is bad, we should do something about this, you can get that information from Microsoft. There's a tool that can be downloaded that will allow you to fix that problem. But the difficulty is you want to be sure and test it with all of your applications because it may break some of the other things that are there.
I would like. Well, that doesn't sound very good.
It does not sound very good, and that's the why the problem is so serious.
Have you taken any steps at Iowa State to try to block this?
So far, we have not on a corporate-wide basis. We're still testing.
All right. If you have any questions about that or anything else that you'd like to ask Jeff, give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we got an email from Matt in Ames, and you mentioned earlier that you were running a Linux box at your house to stream internet content to your television, and that triggered something for Matt. He says, your listeners who are using Linux might be interested to know that Ames now has a Linux user group, which can help users find appropriate replacement software as they move to the new OS. More info and other links to other Iowa Linux clubs can be found at ameslug.org. And Jeff, for those of us who don't run Linux and don't have any idea why we would, why do people use Linux?
Well, people use Linux for a couple of reasons. One is they're ornery and contrary and don't like Microsoft products. Another is because we've bought hardware cheap, either used equipment or built equipment, and we don't want to spend the extra $100, $150 to buy a copy of Windows to put on it. Others are looking at, you know, working with the kinds of things that you do in a Unix environment. That's where Linux is works best. And if you're interested in studying Unix and C programming and the running of websites and servers, then Linux is a good environment to be in. We tend to be in the cheap group at our house. We build machines or we buy old machines from the surplus houses, and we put Linux on them because that's the cheap way to do it.
All right. And Linux is an open source computer software program.
That's right. The nice part about open source, of course, is it's a great place to learn about programming and operating systems, because if you want to know how a utility works or how the operating system works, you can go get the source code and look at it and figure it out on your own. And so theoretically, if it breaks, you can fix it, which is something that you can't do with Windows. If Windows breaks, all you can do is complain.
And where does if there's a new operating system, where does it come from?
Where does it come from? Well, there are people all over the world that work together to produce Linux. It's the center of Linux is a person named Linus Torvalds, who created it in the first place a long time ago. But there are hundreds of people and companies, not just individuals, but companies like Red Hat and Novell and others that contribute to Linux in that creation.
Dwayne is on the line from Marshalltown. Hello, Dwayne.
Hello.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
I have a program I got back in the 90s called VTuner.
Okay.
I paid $29 for it, and it picks up every FM and TV station in the world. And I used to listen to jazz in a place in Paris, and about the time the satellites came, that station disappeared, so I had to find another one. And I used to listen to BBC over in Hong Kong, and all of those disappeared. So I suspicion it's every one that hasn't signed a contract with somebody.
Well, different radio stations decide to stream. What you're really listening to is radio stations that stream audio onto the internet.
Yeah.
And that's their decision for various licensing reasons or expense. They may or may not decide to do that. Right now, you can listen to us on the internet at iowapublicradio.org, and many of the tuners include that. I was looking I think it was Radio Time this morning is a site that does tuning, and you can connect to it from there. So, you know, it depends on the nature of the station.
Well, I listen to your station on VTuner a lot because sometimes reception isn't good, you know, at night in Marshalltown.
Sure.
But a lot of times, yeah.
And why would you use VTuner over streaming from the internet going to individual sites?
Because I find weird sites.
Okay.
One of the most interesting things I saw was in Bangkok, some little sixth grader junior high group was having a music program, and it was I was just absolutely overwhelmed by the thing because it was totally it's just a mess. It was it reminded me of the church Christmas programs. It was just so interesting to watch these kids. But also you can get other stations in the world, like I used to listen to Pakistan's news in the night until they had a thing going on politically. But for several years, I listened to they had an English newscast from Pakistan, and then just for browsing around for $29, it's a one-time charge.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it sounds kind of like Jeff. You were talking earlier about Clicker. It sounds kind of like a Clicker for other kinds of content.
Sure, and there are several of those. I mentioned the site Radio Time. Radio Time does the same kind of thing as a free service. There are probably others. I know iTunes has a large number of radio stations that are listed as free. Not everything in iTunes is for pay. So a lot of it is free downloads, and the radio system is one of them, and they do have a wide variety of things there,
right,
as well.
And podcasts in mm-hmm. iTunes as well. Well, it's interesting. Duane mentioned paying a fee for that. It seems to me that that's the kind of program that people are not willing to pay for anymore.
Well, you know, it depends. Once upon a time, that was an expensive thing, and now there are undoubtedly free alternatives for it.
All right, Duane, thank you so much for your call. And Jeff Ballvance, thank you so much for your time today.
Glad to be here.
Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Christina Sarnelli. We had technical support today from Russell Mansky in Ames. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at iowapublicradio.org. You can also stream Iowa Public Radio from iowapublicradio.org. No charge for that service. We also welcome your comments anytime. If there's something you'd like to hear on Talk of Iowa, if you know someone with a great story to tell, send us email, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. I'm Charity Nubby. Coming up tomorrow on Talk of Iowa, it's Horticulture Day. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. We'll be right back.